Silence.
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerf Ray Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 181 of Nerd Pride Radio. 181 is the length in hours of the longest streaming charity concert ever held. Yes, beginning on the 21st of October 2001, the Canadian Musicians for Liberty organization held the longest ever live event streamed over the internet. Around 1,000 musicians, comprising various bands and solo performances, took turns performing live music to a small local audience and directly through the internet. This concert continued for those aforementioned 181 hours, with breaks only of a few minutes while the acts swapped around. The event was held to raise money for the Canadian Red Cross USA Relief Fund. To date, $34,000 Canadian has been raised. This event, by the way, took place at Touchdown's Bar and Grill in Mississauga, Ontario, Canada. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me.
How are you doing today, Mike?
I'm awesome. My name's Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's probably like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place where I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. My co-host this week is my son Noah.
Thank you, Father, for the introduction. It was very good.
You're welcome, Noah. It's good to have you aboard. So, before we get into the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast, it's time for updates. Okay, I'm sorry, I can't do it anymore. This was Noah's idea.
I can't even do it anymore either.
This was Noah's idea. He just realized that my initials, NPR, are the same as those for National Public Radio, and he thought it would be awesome if we could start off an episode trying to sound like public radio personalities, because he's like that. And that's as far as I can get with it. So anyway, we really do have updates. Yeah, you remember me talking about Eli's magic power to find four-leaf clovers? Yeah, that power has not gone away. It was bizarre. We were at the Blue and Gold Banquet for the Cub Scouts last weekend, and he goes outside for all of maybe 5 minutes. And comes back and he goes, oh yeah, found another four-leaf clover. Sure enough, there he's got it in his hand. I mean, literally, walked outside, looked around for a couple minutes, spots one, brings it back in to show off. I don't know how the hell he does that. It is amazing. It is a superpower. It's uncanny. Creepy. All right. But enough about that. Now it is time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy week, I add it to my master list. And the very best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, hey, happy Easter. If you're into Easter, I suppose. I'm recording this the night before Easter, and I'll release it the day after. But, you know, happy Easter. We finished decorating eggs a little bit earlier, and we've got a lazy day ahead of us. We're going to go over to my in-law's place and just have a small supper, and it's going to be really relaxing and really nice. So, I apologize for not having a podcast last week. We were super busy, and I wound up coming down with bronchitis, and I was just miserable for about 4 days, and, took some time off work, laid around, did very little. Now I feel a lot better. Well, okay, I didn't do very little. I watched TV and read, and that's about it. So, anyway, We're already in the Meticulously Pod portion of the podcast, so let's get to it. It's time for Pod People.
Pod People. Pod People. Pod People.
That's right. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and this is where I tell you about them. First off, Doug Loves Movies. Now, no surprise that I listen to Doug Loves Movies. Of course, I've talked about it before, but on his April 9th episode, so just this last week, there's a segment at the beginning where he goes out and he looks at name tags, and people bring name tags that are usually modified movie posters, and then they have to make a pun out of the movie title and work their own name into the movie title in some way. So, for example, and I've put a lot of thought into this, if I were going to be showing up at Doug's show and I were going to be making a name tag for myself, I would bring a poster for Seven Psychopaths, because I love the movie Seven Psychopaths, and then I would change it so it would read Seven Mycopaths, so that my name would be in there. That would be my name tag. And so in this last episode on April 9th, they had two guys sitting side by side, and they both had, each one of them had half of a Batman poster. So when you put them together, they together had a whole Batman poster. And the first guy was Patman, because clearly his name was Pat. And, the other guy was Batmandrew. All right. Because his name was Andrew. Now, this isn't funny to anybody else, but about three of you are chuckling here a little bit because, Pat is the name of DM Darks. Who I've mentioned a million times on this podcast, and Andrew is one of his friends who co-hosts the Me Like Trivia podcast with him and also games in our gaming group and this kind of stuff. So Pat and Andrew, who have been friends forever, the idea that two guys showed up on Doug's show as Patman and Batmandrew, and I immediately thought, oh my God, when did those guys get to Los Angeles? Which obviously it wasn't them, but it was really cute to me. So I bring it here to share for the three people that it entertains. You're welcome. Other than that, though, for podcasts, seriously, the people over at Crooked Media, I talked about them last time with Pod Save America and Pod Save the World. These Crooked Media guys and girls, but mostly guys, these are ex-Obama staffers, people who have worked in the White House or worked in government as, you know, on the Democrat side generally, but have worked in government before, have a lot of experience and knowledge, know a lot of people, and they get really interesting people as guests on their podcasts, and they talk about current events, and they speak their minds, they are raunchy, they are fun, and they are really smart. I really enjoy listening to them. And, in the last couple of weeks, they have introduced their fourth podcast, because they also have with friends like these, with Anna Marie Cox, and then with their friend John Lovett. John Lovett has a show called Love It or Leave It, and Love It or Leave It is just my absolute favorite of everything they do. It's irreverent. God, there's the word. Thanks, Jacob. You're a lot of help. God, I'm sitting here struggling for the word. I know he knows it. He's not helping me. Anyway, and it's like listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, on NPR, except imagine if instead of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, which does news stories, it's that same style of humor, that same kind of wit, but tuned to give political commentary rather than just highlighting news events. And they're really funny and a lot of fun and very smart. So anyway, check out Love It or Leave It if you haven't yet. Just search for Crooked Media in whatever your podcatcher is, and subscribe to all of their podcasts and keep the ones you like, because personally I like all of them, but that's me. And then also, if you haven't checked out S-Town from the people at This American Life and Serial, the new podcast, S-Town, where they've released all seven episodes of the series all at the same time. So rather than having to wait for it to come out week by week or month by month or whatever, they just give us the entire thing, all 7 hours all at once. And I am 2 hours into it, where they've just hit a sudden twist, and I am as in love with this podcast as everybody else in the world seems to be. It's getting awesome reviews. It's been topping the charts on iTunes. I doubt that for most of you, I am the first person to mention S-Town. But you should check it out. S-Town is, S stands for shit. So it's actually Shit Town. And it is a small town in rural Alabama. And this reporter from This American Life, got word of a story of police corruption and a rich kid who gets away with murder, goes around bragging about it and got away with murder. So he goes down to find out if there's any credence to the stories he's hearing. And he goes out to investigate, and the story goes off in a direction nobody obviously expected. And it's just really interesting. So if you haven't checked out S-Town and you want to kill 7 hours, man, this one's pretty good. So I recommend it. Okay. See, and then that's it for podcasts. That's all I got. So now, again, this week, by the way, all about consuming media. It's all I did. So now, Nerd Pride Book Report. That's right. I read stuff once in a while, once in a long while. And I told you I was going to be reading Percy Jackson, the first Percy Jackson book, and I didn't, because I pulled up my Kindle app on my phone and I searched for Percy Jackson, and there's book two and there's book three. There's no book one. Honey, don't we have book one on Kindle? Yeah, of course we did. That's how I read it. Well, it's not here. So I searched and I searched. I couldn't get it to pull up. And so I got frustrated because I don't want to go buy it again, because I know we bought it, but I don't want to pull up our other devices and see what, I don't want to look. Because I was sick. I was very sick. And so instead, I took the lazy way out and I just read a Stephen King novel, 11-22-63, which has also been made into a TV series, which is not nearly as good. I've only seen like the first 2-3 episodes of the TV series, and it's just not, it's not the same quality. But 11-22-63, I don't know if you're like me. I'm a sucker for Stephen King novels. I love Stephen King. I've always appreciated his work. And this is a great one, especially since, look, I already like Stephen King, and you know I'm a sucker for a good time travel story. And that's what this is. It is a guy who has an opportunity to go back in time and, the title of the story is 11-22-63, which, if you don't know your history, is the day that Kennedy was assassinated. And so this is our premise, is, dude, can you go back in time and stop Kennedy from being assassinated? That's, and then what happens? And it's a great story, and it's a great love story, and it's a great time travel story. And the time travel is not, it's not rigorously scientific. It's a Stephen King novel. All right, so it's a little more mystical than hard science. But I wound up thoroughly enjoying this entire book. And there's a whole section that involves relationship stuff. And I like the people involved so much that it got to a moment where I loved the people so much, and I was so happy with how things were going and the kind of developments we were seeing. And I realized, wait, I'm way too happy. Oh, God damn it. I'm being set up, aren't I? Oh, God. It's like the first chapter of Game of Thrones when you see Bran climbing the towers and doing all of this little kid stuff. And within one chapter, we get inside his head and we watch him going, and we fall in love with Bran because he's so cool and he's so awesome. Such a cool kid. Only to have him thrown from the tower and paralyzed for life. God damn it. Why would you do that to a guy? Make us fall in love with a character just to hurt it. Jesus. And so that's what I recognized with this one. I got halfway through the book and I'm like, wait a minute. This is all a setup. I'm being set up for disaster, aren't I? And I won't tell you whether or not that's true, because it played out differently than I thought it was going to. But still, great story. I really enjoyed 11-22-63. So, and now I got done with it. And so I closed it out. And so it takes me back to my library on my Kindle app, and it says, okay, there's 11-22-63. And then right after it, the very next thing in the list is the first Percy Jackson book, book one. Why in the hell could I not find it before? So I don't know. I'm an idiot. But anyway, check that one out. And then, you know, I'll read some Percy Jackson books and I'll report back on that, because, you know, kid fiction is also fun. That's it for book report. What else do I got? Oh, I know what I got. Roku. Yeah, Roku is the box that I used to watch all of my streaming television on, and I don't anymore, but I love to say Roku like that, so I keep saying it. And this is just me talking about the TV that I watch, and when I say TV, I mean Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu, because I don't have cable anymore. I don't have satellite. I just watch internet television, which is awesome. So, here's just the stuff I've finished up in the last couple of weeks. I watched all of Steven Universe season 3. And, if you've never watched Steven Universe, I don't know what I have to do. How many times do I have to tell you to go watch Steven Universe? It is beautiful. It is an absolutely beautiful show. And, once again, they tackle silly kid plot issues. And at the same time, they also handle very serious topics that involve, adult relationships, that involve consent, that involve, there's all sorts of stuff that goes on. And yet, all handled in a way that is completely appropriate for children. The idea that the writers here are brilliant enough to create these conversations in a context that is appropriate for children and yet teaches them lessons that hopefully they carry over with later in their lives is just gorgeous and beautiful. And if you don't cry at least once during an episode of Steven, or during a season of Steven Universe, you're not going to cry at every episode, but you're going to cry at least once per season. If you don't, it's because you have no soul. Oh, man, I love Steven Universe. I love it so much. So go watch Steven Universe. Like I say, season 3 is now out on Hulu, so that's what I watch. And I'm sure there's more episodes beyond season 3, but just haven't gotten there yet. Oh, God, it's not here on my list. But speaking of season 3, if you didn't catch the first episode of season 3 Rick and Morty, go find it now. It's on Comedy Central. So if you go to ComedyCentral.com, and you don't live where I live, where it's blocked because my cable company is a bunch of assholes. If you just want to go to Comedy Central, or not Comedy Central, CartoonNetwork.com. Go to they both block me, Cartoon Network and Comedy Central. But go to CartoonNetwork.com, watch the first episode of Season 3, Rick and Morty. You will not be disappointed, assuming you've already seen the first two seasons. God, if you haven't seen the first two seasons, once again, what do I have to do, people? Go watch them. And then the first episode of Season 3 is brilliant. Is really, really good. So, let's see. I finished watching Firefly again. So this is like my fifth or sixth run through Firefly. But you know, I saw it with Eli this time, and Eli loves that show. We haven't watched the movie yet. So we're going to watch Serenity probably this weekend yet. He's completely in love with the show. It was wonderful. Love being able to share it with him. And give me another year or two and I'll share it with Noah and I'll watch it again because I love Firefly that much. So, I didn't realize I had never finished watching the final season of Parks and Rec. How in the hell did I miss that? And so I went back to go rewatch and I'm like, oh, okay, no, I saw this first episode and I realized, oh, after the first episode, it just didn't motivate me. I didn't care for the first episode of Parks and Rec's final season. But you know, muscled through it, finished watching the rest of it. And then, two episodes in, oh, I'm in love with these people again. Leslie Knope is one of the greatest characters around. The idea that we have a sitcom with this level of positivity in it is awesome. And the characters are still quirky and they can still be mean and they can still do dumb stuff and they can still whatever. But the idea that it's a sitcom where the heroes are all going to succeed. They're all going to move forward. They're all going to do well. That's awesome. And, I had another comment to say about that and I don't remember what it was. Damn it. Anyway, really liked that. All right. Now to get off of the topic of crap that I really, really loved. Oh man. Have you seen Chappelle's new specials on Netflix? Yeah. Dave Chappelle finally comes out and does some new comedy specials for Netflix. And in fact, he did two specials and they're released together as if they're a series of two. And they were not good. They just were not good. It was, he had some funny bits. You know, it's a comedy special. There were some things I went, oh yeah, that's cute. That's funny. Look, when he talks about OJ, his OJ bits are mostly really funny. but they weren't really funny. You know what I mean? They were just a little funny. And there was a lot of stuff that I see what he was going for. He made a lot of rape jokes, and he made a lot of misogynistic jokes, and he made a lot of homophobic jokes, and he was trying to prove a point, and he didn't. He just didn't. They just, instead of, you know, being ironic and trying to show that, oh, he makes a homophobic joke to prove how he really isn't homophobic. Well, no, he really is. And it's really obvious that he is, from the context of this. And it just, ugh, it was just uncomfortable and it was sad. I did not enjoy these. And also, he simply wasn't, in spite of the content, even leave aside the content, move to his less controversial bits. He just wasn't funny. Funny like a stand-up comic, but not funny like Dave Chappelle. God, his last comedy special that I don't remember. I don't know if it's his last one before this, but it's the last one I remember seeing, where he tells the story about, being in a car with his white friend and they're both high when they get pulled over. That was really funny. That special made me laugh my ass off. All right. And these just, you know, a couple of good moments and then that was it. It's too bad. And he does that Chappelle thing. And if you're familiar with Dave Chappelle's stand-up, he does that Chappelle thing where he laughs at his own jokes. And in the past, he's used that really sparingly. And you'll see him laugh at his own joke and you're like, that's the punctuation mark. That's the part that lets you know that, man, this is one of his best. It's so funny, even he can't stop himself from laughing. God, he does it nonstop through both of these. It's like, oh, God, quit patting yourself on the back, man. It's not that good. Yeah. So it's kind of sad. So really, I mean, you know, if you got 2 hours to kill and you really want to check it out and see if I'm off my nut here, go for it. But I really recommend just save your time. It's not, there's funnier things you could be watching if it's comedy you're interested in. I mean, this is just was not worth it, really. So, okay, there you go. That's my Roku. Oh, what do I want to do next? Oh, I know. It's the Science Corner.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
And that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. Okay, before we get into the science, I now have to back up to Roku. Because my son Jacob, who apparently doesn't want his voice to appear on the mic, but will inform me during the breaks, says, Dude, you should have talked about Samurai Jack. He says, I know it's on your list, but it needs to be higher on your list because Samurai Jack is spectacular. There's a new season of Samurai Jack, for those of you who weren't aware. And according to my mute son, Jacob, it is, yes, darker and edgier and more evolved than earlier Samurai Jack, and yet still maintaining the same humor and silliness and the spirit of the original Samurai Jack all woven through it that makes the entire thing an absolute treat. He is so excited about the new season of Samurai Jack. So, I will also put that on my list and I'll move it up a couple of notches and make sure that I watch it soon. And you guys should do that too. Especially if you're a fan of the original, I've only seen the original in, you know, fits and starts. I need to go back and rewatch the original Samurai Jack, which is all available streaming. And then once I do that, then watch the new season. And then I can talk to you guys about how awesome it was, but I haven't gotten that far yet. But back to the science. All right. Here's the thing. I've never even given this a second thought in my life. Never even occurred to me that, look, the phases of matter, literally, for me, solid, liquid, gas, I have no problem with those phases of matter. And then somewhere in seventh grade was the first time someone mentioned the idea that there was a phase of matter beyond gas, and it was called plasma. It's a superheated state that you find in the sun, and okay, I can live with plasma. And I have the idea in my head from physics I've read that there are some other lower temperature phases of matter that involve like the Einstein-Bose condensates and stuff like this that have very odd configurations and weird conductivity and superconductivity, transposition of matter, this sort of stuff. And okay, and it doesn't matter what any of that means, but that's the vague idea I've had, is that it's all about temperature and it involves solid, liquid, gas, plasma, and then maybe some freaky stuff when you get down close to you know, a few degrees from absolute zero. And that's all I know. That's all I know, man. And here's the thing. And to me, phases of matter always have seemed to be strictly about temperature, although I'm aware that the boiling and freezing point of water change based on the pressure as well. And, you know, there's, you know, you can, for certain substances, you can modify the pressure such that at certain pressures, you skip straight from solid to gas and there is no liquid phase, such as carbon dioxide, here at, standard atmospheric pressures on Earth. There is no liquid phase of carbon dioxide, at least, you know, for us here. You could certainly create one, but, all right. So in the back of my mind, I kind of knew it was more complicated than I was thinking, but I've never really given much thought to it. I mean, really, honestly, solid, liquid, gas, plasma. That's all I know. But now it turns out that there's all sorts of stuff that gets worked in here. For example, iron. If you take iron, iron is magnetic, right? Yeah, that's one of the really cool things about iron is that magnets stick to it. We love that. And in fact, if you stick a magnet to it and you stroke it across it the right way, you can magnetize the iron. You can line up the poles of the molecules in there and you can magnetize the iron. All right, really cool. But did you know that as you heat up iron, eventually, and they showed this, they had a little iron pendulum thing, and the pendulum is stuck to the magnet. And then they start heating up the pendulum, this little ball of iron at the end, the part that's stuck to the magnet. They start heating it up. And just at the point where iron gets so hot it starts to glow, once it starts to glow red, oh, it stops being magnetic. I mean, like, literally, they heat up the iron, and just as soon as it starts glowing, thunk, it just kind of swings away. And the magnet doesn't even affect it anymore. It just swings there. And so they're like, okay, now let's take the heat off. And you can watch the thing. The glowing starts to slowly, you guys can't see my finger marking the path of the pendulum here, but it would really help if you had this visual. And the little pendulum of glowing iron is still swinging and swinging. And then as it fades, you can see it suddenly cools enough that all of a sudden, thunk, it sticks back onto the magnet again. And that is a phase shift in the iron that at whatever temperature that is, and I have no idea what temperature it is, but at whatever temperature that is, halfway to boiling, I think, where it starts to glow, all of a sudden, it stops being magnetic. Its properties change due to that temperature change, and so now it's in a new phase. There's still a solid phase, but a new phase of iron. That's crazy to me. And by the way, this has nothing to do with phases of matter, but it was only... This was brought up as part of a video by Physics Girl, I believe it was. So if you go to YouTube, look for Physics Girl. She's awesome. Really, really fun stuff. And she was actually starting off this video by showing that liquid oxygen is magnetic. Did you know that? I had no clue. She takes liquid oxygen and pours it over an electromagnet. And the stuff just starts, it does this little bouncing, sizzling thing where the liquid oxygen drops are just bouncing back and forth between the heads of this electromagnet. And then she turns the magnet off, floop, and all of a sudden all that liquid oxygen just drops, drops to the table and hits, splashes, and all turns to gaseous oxygen and disappears. But it was just the coolest thing. Liquid oxygen is magnetic. I had no idea. But anyway, but that's not the important part. The important part is the iron. The iron changes phase and loses its magnetism just by heating it up. And so I came to all of this because I was kind of looking around because there's headlines that are screaming that scientists have discovered an additional phase of matter, a different phase for water particularly. And it's actually several different phase changes for water. And it took a little while because, you know, different phases of water. This is, you know, how science headlines can be. Regular news doesn't really grasp science all that well sometimes. But once I looked into it, it turns out that as you heat up water, again, you're on your way to boiling with water, get it up to, in Celsius at least, you get it up to, start at 50 degrees Celsius. You get halfway to boiling, and all of a sudden, the refractive index of your water changes. Like, not just like a gradual change as it heats up. It's like at 50 degrees, there is a sudden change of the refractive index, a sudden change in how light passes through water. It's still liquid. it still looks and acts for the most part like liquid water, but all of a sudden the refractive index changes because you've hit 50 degrees Celsius. Which, you know, is way too hot to be comfortable for any of us, but still a very relevant change. Heat it up a little bit more, and at 53 degrees Celsius, its conductivity changes. At 57 degrees Celsius, all of a sudden, the surface tension changes. I mean, the surface tension of water is one of the most disproportionate forces relative to the size of the molecules. So the surface tension of water is really, really fascinating because it's extremely powerful for what it should be. And the surface tension of water is a lot of what allows water to behave the way it does, allows animals to interact with it the way they do, allows life to exist. But the surface tension of water all of a sudden changes at 57 degrees Celsius. Its ability to conduct heat suddenly changes at 64 degrees Celsius. I mean, it's like all these little shifts where, yeah, the very obvious ones of solid, liquid, gas. I mean, when you're looking at the actual, you know, when the physical property changes so dramatically that, I mean, going from solid to liquid, from liquid to gas, that's really, really dramatic. It's easy to notice. And that's why we think of, well, those are our standard states of matter. But there's all these other phase changes that happen that as you change temperature, as you change pressure, all of a sudden, all these other properties of a substance will change at different levels. And it just, to me, it just blew me away. It was just this revelation of, oh wow, this crap is all way more complicated than I had any clue to. It was, I mean, like I say, I always suspected that, you know, especially when you're looking at that high-end physics stuff at really low temperatures and all the basically teleportation magic that matter seems to be able to do, at least according to, you know, news, science headlines. But, you know, I've always had this idea that, okay, yeah, there's some weird stuff that goes on at extremes and all this, but this is all within, you know, normal everyday ranges of temperatures. And there's all these different properties other than just the strict solid liquid gas dynamic that we're so familiar with. There's so many other properties of matter that can be altered and changed as temperature and pressure and other factors change. And it was just, I don't know. It blew me away because it revealed how much I didn't know. I mean, again, I'm not saying anything original here, obviously. But the idea that the more you learn, the more you realize that, oh crap, I don't know a thing, do I? I mean, it is, wow. Anyway, it was just overwhelming and I wanted to share it with you guys. So, if I conveyed even a tiny bit of that spark to you, then I feel like I've done my job here. So hopefully. All right. What do I have next? Okay. Hold on. You may not be hearing me well because I got the microphone turned for Jacob, because Jacob actually has more to talk about in the science corner. So I'm just going to leave it to him.
Mike, I don't know what you're talking about. Jacob died 5 years ago. You need to let him go. You keep mentioning him, but he's gone. Yeah, anyway, this is Jacob, and I actually happen to have the wonderful opportunity to sit down and speak with astronaut Clayton Anderson. And he was at our college campus giving a speech over what he does. And it was actually predominantly elementary school kids coming to see him and stuff, all wanting to be astronauts and whatever. But I actually work for my college as a venue support technician. So I was setting up all of the equipment that he needed to broadcast the sound with microphones and whatever, and his PowerPoint, so on and so forth. And in that, there was a small break that we had where everybody was setting up everything else that he needed for the event. So he and I sat down, and I got a good 15-20 minutes alone with an astronaut who's been in space, and absolutely fascinating guy. And I gotta say, it's not like every day that you get to make a flat earth joke to a guy who's actually been in space. And, because he was, showing off different pictures to me from when he was in space, and he had one where he is in his suit outside the space station with Earth behind him. And he's like, well, you see that? That was actually taken on 13th Street in Hollywood in a special production facility. And I was like, oh yeah, because, you know, the earth is flat. It has to be a production, right? And he was like, oh boy. And he went on a tangent of how, there's like a phenomena of, basketball players are all claiming to be flat earthers. And it's probably very much a marketing thing, because even my man Shaq, like, I love Shaq.
Shaq, known widely for his brain.
Shaq's a really cool dude, though. Yes. So it was kind of weird to hear that he's a flat earther. But back to the actual astronaut, I continued to make jokes with him, and somebody came up and they're like, do we need to give you some sort of introduction or something? He's like, no, you can introduce me and then I'll go up and do my thing. And I'm like, that's when you start playing guitar, right? And little to my knowledge, apparently there is actually a thing in Canada where Canadian astronauts are actually super celebrities. And so he starts making jokes saying, oh, no, I'm not from Canada. I'm not that guy. And I'm like, oh, apparently that's a thing. So he starts talking about Canadian astronauts and how one of them is releasing a new song album that is...
Yeah. The guy is awesome. Awesome.
I knew nothing about this. I
followed his YouTube stuff. He actually had a Twitter conversation with William Shatner from space, and it was just... It was really, really phenomenal stuff. But
yeah, I never heard that stuff. So I was mind blown hearing all this stuff for the first time. And not only has this guy released an album, but he's also done a children's book and a novel and stuff like that. And Clayton Anderson himself is such a fascinating and charming guy who I don't remember the name of the novel, but he's released a novel.
Hold on. The Canadian astronaut, I just wanted to make sure I had the right name. It's Commander Chris Hadfield. And Chris Hadfield is the Canadian dude who you can watch his YouTube videos where he does all sorts of things. I mean, he plays guitar in space. He made a music video in space. He shows the first time I ever saw him, it was wringing out a washcloth in space and watching how the water creeps off of it and up your arm. And it was just... Anyway, Chris Hadfield is a hero. Awesome guy.
And I don't know if it was Chris Hadfield. He said, I believe it was some sort of Canadian astronaut that he went into space and he turned on his space helmet. He had everything on, and once everything was vacuumed together, he stepped out into space, and suddenly he went blind. He went completely blind. He couldn't see a thing, and it was so scary. He didn't know if it was just the shock of finally being in space. And it turns out that when you are prepping your spacesuit, you're supposed to clean out the inside screen with like soap and water and stuff. And then once you get into the suit, you're supposed to vacuum out all that soap by turning on a valve and whatever. And this guy didn't do that. So not only did his eyes start watering from the stuff, but when you're in space in low gravity, the water droplets started like circling around his eyes and would just stay there. So he had these huge water bubbles covering his eyes, and oh no, he's blind. And Clayton Anderson was like, which is a scary thing to happen, but you should kind of prep for that. You're supposed to know that's supposed to happen. And he also told me a story of a guy who had an actual accident where the astronaut blamed his tech group, the people who are supposed to get together his space stuff and whatever. Right. But he should have checked it himself as well.
His space equivalent of a pit crew.
Exactly. And so for this training, to train for zero gravity or low gravity, you go underwater and you move around in high pressures underwater. Well, he didn't have the right equipment in there, and he blew out his eardrums and lost, I think it was 75% of his hearing. And because of that, because he can't hear transmissions, he was never allowed to go into space and ruined his chances forever of going into space.
And how horrible.
Absolutely tragic, horrible stuff. But,
yeah, it's, hold on, it's right here.
Yep. If you want to look more into Clayton Anderson, he has a website out there. Just search Clayton Anderson. He's got a Facebook page, his own website, and stuff like that. But he's also released an novel called The Ordinary Spaceman, and I would suggest you pick it up. I think I'm going to pick it up myself, because while he was there, he was doing signings of everybody's books who came up to him. And from what I've been told, the book is a fascinating read, and he's really all about motivating people. And he's like, you really don't have to be a genius to go into space. You can be any person, as long as you have the drive, as long as you're lucky, as long as you have all the resources, you can potentially get into space if you work hard enough. And that's kind of cool. So, yeah.
See, that is awesome. And, I had pointed out to Jacob that, you know, Clayton Anderson is one of the few people who have ever been to outer space, and, there have been 536 people who have been to space, at least as far as this Wikipedia article is concerned. And 536, and one of them, Jacob actually met in person. He has a selfie with him. It's a very cool guy. And then I thought, you know, that's really special, one of 536. But then I was just earlier, I just told Jacob this, just earlier tonight, I'm watching a clip of Jimmy Kimmel hosting the Oscars, and I'm like, you know, only 30 people or so have ever hosted the Oscars, and Jimmy Kimmel's one of them. So, I mean, you know, he's like 10 times more special than a spaceman, right? I mean, just, I mean, math doesn't lie. That's all I'm saying. So, anyway, Clayton Anderson is just spectacular. I'm really, I was so jealous, so jealous. Jacob was there at the event. He's sending me, you know, a copy of the selfie. He's texting it to me. I was just so jealous that I didn't get to be there with him, because that just sounded so cool. So, anyway, enough of that. You know what's up next? Yeah, that's right. It's time for the Pod-O-Matic. Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Because I can hear you asking. Well, that's where you guys come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topics to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds, and I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list, because Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And okay, the first number, by the way, is 91, but I just realized, oh god, I meant to talk about Beauty and the Beast. How did I miss that? Oh, we just went and saw Beauty and the Beast today, and I was going to do a science fiction double feature, even though I didn't have two movies, I only had one. But you know, hey, it's time for the Pod-O-Matic, and we've already rolled, so I'll just tell you, Beauty and the Beast was really good.
So good.
Emma Watson was awesome. The graphics were awesome. The new songs were awesome. These huge musical numbers. It was just really good. And we went with all six of us, since we're all home for Easter. And Noah even cried, because it was really sweet. And it was just a good movie. So anyway, there. That's the shortened version of it. And instead, we're going to go to 91. All right. And this first one is from Stan. And Stan gives us an FMK, a bed, wed, or behead, if you will. And our choices are Scooby-Doo, Snoopy, and Pluto. Go.
I gotta say right off the bat, behead Pluto, because Pluto is the most dog-like out of all these
dogs. Yes, that was exactly my first thought, is that, okay, Pluto's really just a dog. Snoopy, I mean, I know Snoopy's just a dog, but he's a dog with an imagination and and an internal life, at least, and a... Yeah. Okay, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Both of the others have somewhat exciting lives. One's more imagination than real, granted. Mm-hmm. So the question is, do I want to marry the one who has great imagination and is good to talk with, or do I want to go on these fantastic adventures and unmask people and whatever? Personally, I think I'm just going to go off of my preference for show, and I'd say I want to marry Snoopy, and then I'm gonna go do things with Scooba Dooba Doo.
Yeah, I thought the weed might play into it somewhere. I don't.
Can we throw in Scrappy? Is the
Well, I will murder Scrappy. Sure. Okay. Yeah, you know what? I think clearly murder Pluto. That's you have to behead Pluto, and then you know what? I think also I would marry Snoopy just because, again, he's an artist. He's a creative. He's a rich, beautiful thinker. I would definitely want to marry Snoopy, and that leaves Scooby-Doo for the bed. Just a roll in the hay, and then you can kick him out. So good enough for me. They're all still dogs, though. 58. 58 is further down the list than that, damn it. There we go. Hey, it's from Kyle. And Kyle says, you're given the option to have two additional arms attached to your body that will work as great as the ones you already have. This will happen for no cost and with no health risk to you. Do you do it? Do you want to have four arms?
It all depends, because I thought this question was going to lead up to you'd have to choose where they're going to be.
Ah.
And that's where it comes down to. If I had a choice, I'd probably put them on my shoulder blades. I think that would give me the most diversity. But either on my shoulder blades or my ribs. If that's the case, yeah, yeah. Sure.
Okay. But here's the deal. Now, because I would not take the arms. Me personally, I wouldn't take them.
Okay.
Just because I don't want to be a freak, and the arms I have are working well enough, and I'm an old man. But would you rather have two additional arms? No health risk to you. You can attach them anywhere you want. All right. And they will be completely functional. All right. So the two extra arms, or would you rather be known worldwide? Worldwide famous for being able to drink 2 gallons of whole milk in a single sitting.
Is this even a question? I'd have to go for the milk. You know I'm going to go for the milk every time.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure. Anytime Jacob comes to you and starts the would you rather, it's always something and then be known worldwide for being able to drink 2 gallons of whole milk. It's every time. And then no matter what, I mean, whether it's, you know, would you rather, you know, win $1 million or be world famous for drinking 2 gallons of milk. All right. Or it could be, would you rather accidentally plow into a busload of nuns, killing 100 people? Or, I mean, doesn't matter what the choice is. And then no matter if you don't pick the milk, then he will sit there and argue with you. Okay. Maybe you don't understand. Okay. This is 2 gallons of whole milk. This isn't skim. This is okay. And it just gets funnier every time he does it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, Kyle, I'd take the arms.
50. 50 is from D-Rod. Hey, D-Rod. All right. D-Rod says, oh, wait, hold on. I did. I numbered dials. All right. D-Rod says, if you could choose one fictional television bar to hang out at, which would it be? This does include the characters that would frequent the bar.
Ooh.
Right. And I have here as examples Moe's, Cheers, Patty's Pub, a fictional bar.
I'm really, really lame in that you and I both know I'm a huge, huge Zelda fan.
Oh, yeah?
And in many, many Zelda games is the milk bar, because they can't have, like, alcoholic drinks. So they have the milk bar, but they emphasize milk is only for adults in these games. So it's really cute. But you get a lot of wacky characters in a fantasy world. I'd be into it.
Wow, that is a great answer. Oh, man. Oh, darn it. Because I was gonna go with I mean, my answer's lame now compared to yours. I was gonna go with what's the name of the place where Harry and his friends all order butterbeer?
Oh,
Hogsmeade's.
Yeah,
something like that.
Something like that. They sell like what the is supposed to be a copy of the butterbeer at participating Starbucks. It's like their secret menu thing.
Ugh.
And I will tell you now, it is almost exactly the same as a caramel macchiato and costs a bit more.
Okay, good to know. So anyway, yeah, no, the milk bar from any of the Zelda games, that's clearly the only option. 03 comes to us from... Dun, dun, dun. Hey, it's my buddy Kaz. Did you get to play Mars Needs Cows with us? Were you there that night? No, you weren't.
Nope.
Oh, my God. Kaz wrote a game called Mars Needs Cows, and I have the playtest copy here. Maybe we'll even pick it up tomorrow when we go out to Grandma and Grandpa's.
Sounds cool.
Because it's awesome. I playtested it at game night with Aiden and Caleb and Colby. That's who the other one was. You weren't there. And then I also did it with Eli and some of his friends. And Kaz has got some talent. It's a good game. Anyway, Kaz says, if your soul was on the line and the only way to preserve it was to use a single RPG for everything, what RPG would you use?
See, I'm trying to, like, cheese it and choose something where I pretty much won't die because it's just a story-based RPG.
So. Oh, man. Oh, Jesus, this is tough.
You practically, like, bottle-fed me on 20-sided dice and monster manuals.
I mean, yeah, yeah, well, it's, look, Pathfinder is the one that I want to... that I'd like to choose simply because I know it so well, but, man.
I would say,
it feels dangerous.
Maybe fudge, but that's even more dangerous.
Yeah, I would probably pick story system because I built it myself and it doesn't have a system for killing people built into the game. I mean, you can make one up. You can wing it. But really, it's a judgment call every time. So I would prefer that, because story system is what we used when you guys did the Scout Camp Horror. So that was the one we did for that. Cool. And or, potentially, how about if your entire life was just guided by Choose Your Own Adventure books?
Oh, man. Am I able to, like, keep my thumb on the previous page and go back?
Well, obviously you can. That would be the best part. I'm going to go with Choose Your Own Adventure books. Done. 95. That's good. Keep your thumb there. I like that. 95 is from someone we haven't heard from yet. Sarah Beth, I bet. Let's see. 95. No, it's from D-Rod again. It is from someone we've heard of before. All right. D-Rod says, what's nowhere but everywhere except where something is?
The city of nowhere from Courage the Cowardly Dog.
Really?
That's the best answer I got for that.
What's nowhere but everywhere except where something is? I was going to say nothing. Because there's nothing that's... Well, nothing is everywhere except where something is. But I'll get the nowhere part. I don't know. I'd have to look it up to find out the answer for sure, but I like Jacob's answer best. All right, 25. 25. You know, we'd be getting through these faster if you guys wouldn't space these out so far apart. I didn't have to do so much scrolling. Hey, it's from Kyle. And Kyle says, while I agree that faster than light travel is probably not possible, as well as time travel, is teleportation. Or teleportation by bending space-time.
Entirely.
All right, look. If you could teleport by bending space-time or otherwise, then you would be traveling faster than the speed of light. So if we've already stipulated that traveling faster than the speed of light is impossible, then teleportation is also impossible. However, I don't know enough physics to speak authoritatively on it, but I think... Go ahead.
Have you seen the concept for Stephen Hawking's warp drive?
Yes, yes. I've seen the concept
main thing I'm thinking about.
Of distorting, which wouldn't allow teleportation, but would allow practical faster than light travel. And you would be distorting the size of space-time such that at any given moment, you are never traveling faster than light yourself. However, the space that you're in is shifting through other space at faster than the speed of light, giving the practical effect that you've arrived at the other end faster than light. But technically, you've never moved faster than light. And so far, that is theoretically possible. I don't think we're ever going to do it.
Yeah, but from what I've read and seen, it would take, like, amounts of atomic force we've never even conceived.
That's right. That's right. Well, I think, I covered this a couple years ago, and I cannot remember the details of it, but I think it was like, you could do it, but to move an ordinary, you know, what we might think of as a standard sized spaceship would require, you know, the entire mass of Jupiter being converted from mass into pure energy in order to carry you, you know, X amount of distance or whatever. And now we've actually refined those calculations and gotten it down to, oh, you know, only the mass of the moon. So, you know, we're getting closer. But that none of that is, you know, I think practically it's still an absolute impossibility. But, man, it would be fascinating to live long enough to see.
Man. So. I just want to see, like, a sci-fi Jupiter harvester now. That would be so cool. If we could harvest Jupiter for energy, but we're losing Jupiter and it, like, throws the rotation of everything out of whack, that'd make for such a good, like, sci-fi thing.
You know who makes the Jupiter harvester? John Deere. Did you guys know that John Deere, this is a couple years old now, by the way, now that I'm speaking of John Deere, that John Deere tried to pull an iTunes on its buyers such that when you buy a John Deere tractor,
you don't technically own it?
Well, you own the tractor, sure. But the tractor is run by all of this very convoluted software. And that software, just like iTunes, just like all these other companies have managed to weasel through the law, John Deere tried to claim that, yeah, but we still own that software, so at any point, we could revoke that software. We have the right to just take it away from you anytime we want. So technically, yes, you've bought this big chunk of metal, but if you want it to be a tractor, well, we own the thing that makes it a tractor. And they were defeated because when you try and take the iTunes logic there and apply it to something as substantial and earthy as a tractor, then suddenly everybody involved can see how stupid that is. That you can't buy, you don't own things that you've purchased. Everyone, when it's a tractor, everyone can see it and go, oh yeah, no, that's dumb. Of course you own the goddamn tractor. What kind of stupid logic is that? But when it's software, yeah, Kindle, Amazon owns all of my damn books and they're allowed to make changes to the books I have already purchased. I have purchased them and I have them on my Kindle and they're allowed to make changes to those books whenever they want because technically they own them. That just drives me batshit.
Because people can come into your house and just take books off your shelf and rewrite them.
Well, no, not anybody, but yes, the original publishers of the books, they are allowed to come in, as long as they give 24 hours notice, they're allowed to come into your house and make physical edits to the books that you have on your shelf.
Same thing goes for Steam. They can take away your games if they want, because some games have been banned and stuff like that.
Right, it's all, once it's in the realm of software, software corporations have convinced the government that it's okay for us to not own the things that we buy. And it was only in the form of John Deere did we finally get to tell a corporation to, no, that's stupid. What are you guys, idiots? Of course I own a tractor I paid for. How dare you? But, you know, it hasn't spread anywhere else. I mean, it's, you know, I still don't own my Kindle books. Jacob still doesn't own his Steam games. So, you know. To hell with us, I suppose.
Well, at least bless John Deere for being jerks and bringing that
yes,
to life.
Yes, yes. Thank you, John Deere, for being such overreaching, greedy bastards that at least we have a toehold in there where we go, okay, we can draw the line at tractors. Maybe from there we can back off to we draw the line at full-sized vans, okay? And then eventually we'll get down to I own my car. Wouldn't that be awesome? 80. Number 80 comes from This is weird, by the way, Jacob, because of all the kids I've had doing Podomatics with me, you're the only one that actually leans in to read stuff because you actually care what's coming up next. Well, yeah, I like that.
I got to be prepared. I can't ever make comments without mentally preparing myself first. I don't do good at improv.
Exactly.
I've never improvised in my life.
Exactly. All right. This is from Kaz, and Kaz says, "Tell us why fudge worked so well for Pariah. If you could do Pariah again, what mechanics would you use?"
Yeah, I just mentioned fudge earlier.
Yes, you did just mention fudge. All right. For those of you who aren't familiar with fudge mechanics, the fudge gaming system is it's for role-playing games, storytelling games, and the idea is you roll four dice that the dice are just marked with plus, minus, or blank. And so you either have a number of pluses or a number of minuses, or, you know, sometimes they cancel each other out. But you wind up getting a number from -4 to +4. And when you roll, high numbers are good, low numbers are bad. And everything's described in words. So instead of, you know, you have a strength score of 7 or whatever it is, it's no, you have a strength that is excellent. You have a strength that's good. Your strength is mediocre. Whatever it is. So everything's just described in words. And then instead of having numbers to deal with, you just use these pluses and minuses to shift things up and down this scale. And in theory, I get it. But in actual practice, what I don't like about fudge is the dice don't spread out well enough. So that +4, -4, it tends very close to 0. Almost every roll you make is going to be either -1, 0, or +1. Everything. Which means if your score is, you know, if you have a score that's good, then you know you're either going to score just below good, just above good, or good every single time. It's just, it's a rare thing to get extreme results. And thus, you know, when we play our role-playing games, we like our long shots. We like our swashbuckling stories where we go diving from the rafters and praying for the best and miraculous things happen and we become these fantastic heroes. Whereas you do that in fudge. Look, if you don't have the stats for it, you know, if you don't already have a great chance, then maybe you shouldn't be diving from the rafters. Well, damn, you just cut out half my fun. And look, and fudge can be modified to make that a little bit better, but go ahead.
And that's what I was going to go into on how I like fudge, because I remember as a kid playing a fudge campaign with you, and I absolutely loved it. I was having so much fun, and I loved the concept of it, but then I go to school, and I really, really want to play with my friends. Well, I don't always have fudge dice on hand, so you can make it work with regular dice or pennies from your pocket.
Right.
And the pennies represent pluses or minus, depending on the heads or tails. If you have a Canadian one, it can be the neutral one or whatever. But I just like the accessibility of it and how you can play it with the scraps you have on hand if you don't have the official dice going on.
Yes. Yes. And look, and I love the fudge system for what it was. But my problem, I took the fudge system, I used it for Pariah, and Pariah was a game of, it's very much X-Men New Mutants style. It's a world with superpowers, except there's no actual superheroes at this point. We just have people who have weird powers, mostly mental psychic powers, but there's other stuff. And we have, you know, as kids turn up with these powers, the government is snatching them up and putting them into research facilities. And so the story of Pariah is a group of kids trying to escape from this superpower asylum. And I used fudge to write it because I just happened to be part of a fudge group back then. And I came up with this idea for a game, and a fudge publisher actually came to me and said, "Hey, do you actually want to write that game?" I'm like, "Hell yeah." And so I did. And I wrote it with fudge. Yeah, if I were to do it again, I would probably do it with some variation on story system. I know I keep coming back to story system, but I would do it with some variation on that. I would use 12-sided dice, but the superpower system in that game is solid. I mean, it would take very little modification. I mean, if I'm taking it out of fudge and putting it into something else, I mean, literally, it's just a matter of I'm just renaming those levels. So instead of mediocre, fair, good, great, whatever it is, I just replace those with actual numbers. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. and then come up with a dice system that gives me a better spread, that gives me more of the extremes or more of the odds that I really enjoy in a game. And that's about it. I wouldn't change a whole lot, but, you know, a little bit.
You should use R2 for all of that. You have all the way up to 100, right?
Oh, my God. No, Die 100 games suck. Oh, anything with percentile dice in it as a game is terrible. You never need to know your results 1 to 100, ever. God, 1 to 20 is more than enough. All right, 14. And I think this is going to be our last one. Let's go, 14 is... There it is. Oh, we were so close. 14's from Ronster. Hey, Ron. Ron says, the stereotype of Nebraska is cornfields to the horizon. What is something that is relatively unknown to non-Nebraskans?
That pretty much covers it all, really.
Yeah, cornfields. There you go. Look, there is my wife is a teacher, and her aide, her aide's oldest son, lives in... Where does he live? Oh, God, it's on the Mediterranean. It is near Greece. God, for the life of me, I can't remember the name of this little country. Damn it, I should. Anyway, her son lives there, and he was there doing, I think, humanitarian charitable work. But he met his wife there, and so they're married, they have kids, and he decided to stay there permanently. And he brings his wife back to Nebraska to meet his family. She was here. Well, they actually got married here in Nebraska. And so he brings her here. They get married. And in seeing Nebraska for the first time, she was floored to see a distant horizon. Never in her life had she seen flat land, ever. She came from a land of mountains, and I mean, look, if you see something flat, you're looking at the sea, at the ocean. That's the only thing that is flat. Land, look, you're lucky if you can see, you know, a mile in any direction. Much less being, you know, if you're on a small rise in Nebraska, a small rise, and you could be looking out at a horizon that is 13, 15 miles away in every direction. It is unbelievable. And yeah. It gets boring when you're driving through it and it's nothing but cornfields and cows and soybeans. It can get boring driving through it. But if you've never seen flat land in your life, if you've grown up a very provincial person, staying very local, and now you come to Nebraska and you see this huge spread out flat land around you, she thought it was gorgeous.
From what I've heard from a lot of visitors is that Nebraska is a lot more green than a lot of places that you go. While I'm impressed going up to like the Northwest or whatever,
right,
and seeing these golden cliff sides and whatever, I'm fascinated by that because I'm used to the rolling fields and stuff like that.
Right.
I've been told by foreign exchange students and stuff that they come and they love one, how green and flat it is, and then two, how quiet and peaceful it is.
Yes. Yeah, actually, and that's the point. I take for granted how green this area is because I'm used to, you know, I grew up near the Appalachian Mountains. Well, not near the Appalachian Mountains, but we would make trips to the hills and the mountains from where we live. But in upstate New York, things were super green. We had forests. We had forests and woods, and it was green, green. And so I kind of take for granted the green that we have around here in Nebraska because it's all kind of a sameness. It's all very much alike. And then you take a trip to Texas to go see my folks, for example, and as you drive further south, and the whole world just turns brown. And not that there isn't beautiful scenery in Kansas and Oklahoma and Texas, because there is. There are beautiful landscapes in all of those places. But most of the hill country in Texas, they've got hills, which is something that we don't have, and that's pretty cool. But it's also all very brown and gray, and they don't have the same level of greenery that we do. You kind of take it for granted after a while. But we also look, if you're going to come to Nebraska, come during sandhill migration season, the sandhill cranes, because this is one thing that I like to brag about. Every sandhill crane in the world, every damn one of them, passes through Nebraska. every one of them, when they migrate, all of them, no matter how far they spread out in Canada or how far they spread out down south, when they migrate in either direction, they all pass through one tiny little area of the Nebraska sandhills and then spread back out on the other side. It's like this hourglass shape on the map as they all funnel through this tiny little area of Nebraska. And if you come during migration season, you're going to see a lot of damn cranes, and it's really impressive. And look, our sandhills in general, our hill country out west in Nebraska, is actually really beautiful. It is really different. You get so used to Nebraska being all these flat plains, cornfields, cowfields, soybean fields, and you get so used to this, and you forget that, you know, you go a couple hundred miles to the west, and you're still in Nebraska, and now all of a sudden there's these huge rolling hills, and it's, you know, you're almost to South Dakota. You're almost to the Badlands and the, you know, and so it's that kind of territory, and it gets very different, and it's very cool. So, you know, for what's worth, and actually, if you go all the way out to the very, northwest corner of the state, there are, Nebraska hot springs, and there's a bunch of other features out there. But yeah, most of the state, look, it's a couple of big cities and then a lot of corn, and that's really going to be most of it. You're not wrong in that. So, all right, we'll do one more. Last one is number 30.
Tried looking up world records. Apparently, we don't hold a lot.
No, we don't have any world records here. Good. Nice try, though. Last one is from Kaz. And Kaz says, where's the Nerd Pride the R Nerd Pride Radio subreddit? You should at least be posting to the R podcasts. Yeah, I don't do Reddit.
Yo, dog, I can run that for you. I know how to run all the code and stuff like that.
I know you could.
Let me be your moderator, dog.
But
I'm being hip.
But would it be wouldn't it just be embarrassing to go to the trouble of creating our Nerd Pride Radio subreddit, and then, you know, 6 months from now it's got all of like 8 posts in it, and then that's it? I mean, well,
sure, but it is also a really good way to spread the word. You can post your links to your podcast there. You can have discussion forums. I know you have Nerd Pride for that, but for people who, I don't know, it's something I'd consider personally, but I know that ain't up your alley.
Hmm. Yeah, then I'd have to learn to use Reddit. Ugh.
All right, I can show you the world.
I'll talk with my son about it, because it's not a bad idea. It really isn't. There's several things I really ought to get off my butt and do that would help spread the word just a little bit more, because we can always use that. So anyway, hey, look, that's the end, and I am going to turn it over to GLaDOS, and she's going to give us a recap of this week's episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was She Blinded Me With Science as performed by William Shatner. Read a Book by They Might Be Giants. And that was it. All the songs I use are available on iTunes. You check them out, you buy them, you enjoy them, because I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. Don't forget, this podcast is a proud member of the Nerd Pride Network. Angry Geeks Versus, Me Like Trivia, quality nerd podcasting from quality nerd people. If you want to do something to help out Nerd Pride, subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or whatever podcatcher software you use. And then write us a nice review. Give us 5 stars, and then you can put anything in the review. I mean, seriously, you could just insult me in the review if you want, but give me 5 stars. It really makes a difference. And if you want to do something super nice for this podcast, even better than any of the other stuff, recommend it to your friends. Honest to God, find one person and turn them on to Nerd Pride Radio, because if you're enjoying it, then spread the word and let other people enjoy it. Word of mouth is my bread and butter, people. Remember, I am always looking for you listeners to do my work for me. Oh, crap! Kaz did my work for me. Damn it. I forgot he had a 181 for me. I was so excited with Noah to do our National Public Radio opening that I completely forgot that Kaz gave me a 181 fact. Hold on, guys. I'm going to pause this and go find it. There it is. Kaz says that 181 is also the sum of 5 consecutive prime numbers. That's not bad at all. 29 plus 31 plus 37 plus 41 plus 43 equals 181, which itself is also a prime number. All right, slick. I can deal with that. All right, where was I in my credits now? Oh, I've gone and completely rattled myself here. Oh, yeah. Do my work for me. Send me questions and topics for the Podomatic. Watch out every week on the forums and on Facebook for Listener Betrayal. If you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, like Kaz did, then send it to me and save me all of that grueling research. My contact information, which, by the way, Kaz, I had the 181 fact. I already did the grueling research when I thought I was going to record last week, and then I didn't record, but you still sent me some facts when you... apparently you're trying to help me out because you saw me falling behind on stuff. So I already had a fact already worked in, but thank you so much, man. I really appreciate that. So anyway, my contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. You sign up there, send me a message. We will hang out together and become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. Now it's time for Listener Betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I go out to my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. I go out to Facebook and I post up, hey guys, I am recording. Anything you want to add, you put it right there. I will read it off at the end of the cast, which is what I'm doing right now. And of course, look, I'm recording on the night before Easter. It is literally, right now, 11:30 at night, the night before Easter, Central Time. And, there's not going to be much here. Because people have got other stuff to do this family weekend. They've got house guests. They're preparing for Easter tomorrow. They're getting eggs decorated. They're doing all sorts of important stuff. Because, like, I'm looking at Facebook. There ain't nothing here. But I go over to my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. And one person, Kaz. Kaz was here for me, as usual. And Kaz says, good to see a new episode is going up. Yeah, dude, I think so too. Now, tell us what color eggs taste the best. The white and yellow ones. Literally, the ones that, I peel them, mash them up, put them in egg salad. I peel them, cut them in half, and make them into deviled eggs. I don't care. I love any combination of hard-boiled egg and Miracle Whip. I know. Miracle Whip, that makes me even whiter than mayonnaise. But, I personally prefer Miracle Whip for them. I'll take a, you know, a mayonnaise deviled egg. I'm fine with that. You even want to put a little mustard in it, put a little mustard in it, but not too much, okay? But honestly, for me, I just go egg and Miracle Whip, and that's all I need. I don't care. Oh, so awesome. But look, if you're talking about what color of dye makes them taste the best, anything pale. And you know what? I don't think I've ever noticed a flavor difference from the Easter egg dyes, but you ever get the one where some joker kid has decided to put it into every color you've got and let it soak in each one over and over and over until you've got this really dark mottled purple gray egg. And it's interesting because it's so dark and so ugly. And then you go and peel it and it's actually soaked through the shell. So you've got a little bit of dye on that skin underneath, a little bit of dye that's gotten through the egg white. And I've never noticed that there's been a flavor difference, but I would assume that the pink ones taste the best. I mean, for those of you who have sensitive palates and can tell the difference, pink is clearly the way to go. Also, what is your stance on black jelly beans? I will take all of them. I will take every black jelly bean you have and actually eat them. I'm not taking them because I'm bitter and want to throw them away. No, I love black jelly beans. I love black licorice flavor. I will, there's times that it is too intense for me. I mean, I'm not an absolute wild man for black licorice that, you know, it's going to be my preferred flavor, but black jelly beans are the exact right balance of it. Oh, I love a black jelly bean. They're awesome. It's also why I like the peppernut cookies, because we put a little anise in them and you get that, just a hint of that black licorice flavor, and they are so good. So yeah, no, black jelly beans are spectacular. And the best thing about black jelly beans is almost no one else likes them. So when they show up, I get all of them. Yeah, I'll take your black jelly beans. I'm thrilled. Yeah, let's do it. That's awesome. So anyway, thank you guys for joining me. I hope everyone had a happy Easter or whatever it is that you may celebrate for your springtime festival. And, you know, I love you guys. I'll see you next week. It's been awesome.